This episode of Guns Blazing is brought to you by the people at 3Chi. 3Chi is the industry leader in Delta-8 THC products. Delta-8 is a federally legal version of THC and is a more functional alternative to marijuana. It gives you an amazing buzz and a great body feel, but with a clearer head and less anxiety and paranoia. So go to 3Chi.com to shop for Delta-8 edibles like cookies and gummies, or to shop for vapes, tinctures, gummies, and oils that can be used to make your own homemade edibles. Use code GUNS21, G-U-N-S, the numbers 21, at checkout to receive 5% off your order. That's code GUNS21 at checkout to receive 5% off your order. Must be 21 to purchase.
Some years ago, a crack commando comedy unit were given jobs above their pay grade. These men promptly were put on leave and escaped to an underground podcast stackade in an unknown location. Today, still unwanted by big media, they survive as comics of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and you can find them, you can listen to Guns Blazing.
I called in a homie from the West Coast. A Canadian comedian, funny as fuck, outside of having hilarious material, definitely one of the best crowd work gentlemen you've ever seen in your life. He'll turn your shit upside down. I watch in awe. Every TV credit known to man, all the best. I mean, he's just an absolute savage. Tonight's show, at least two specials. I mean, he's done it all. He's an unbelievable human being. And he happens to also be my buddy. Ian Baggs on the show today. What's up, Ian Baggs?
Sean Latham. Oh, my God. Let me tell you about Sean. Okay, people, I don't know about Sean. Sean used to live out here on the West Coast, and it was bumpy for him. I gave him a couch, that kind of thing.
That's right. You gave us a couch.
Yeah. You were living with those crazy guys in that house, and I gave you a couch. And
it was, thanks for that couch again, dude.
No problem. You sold it and you were able to move yourself to Indianapolis and become a huge star. So that was great.
You traded it for crack. That's the truth.
Well, that's how you, I moved the couch. The guy actually gave me the crack first, cause I had to go get it, cause I didn't have a truck. So I had to just move the couch on my back.
Makes sense.
And crack helps with that. You don't really feel the pain. But so you're back. How you feel? How's comedy coming back around for you after the,
pretty good.
The little pandemic.
Pretty good. It's I don't know about you, but I have this thing and as a mental thing where I just don't want to do any of the material I did before. I'm just like, I want to do all new stuff. So, you know, you have to go out there and do an hour. And I'm like, oh, okay, we're going to do a little bit more crowd work because we're not using the old stuff. So it's a lot of fun.
I wish I could just not do my set. But I do feel there's still a part of it where I'm like, man, I don't want to tell these jokes. Yeah. I have to tell. I mean, I'm still telling them, but I'm kind of just messing with them a lot more than I normally would, though. That's for sure.
Yeah. I'm sure there's somebody I'll go out there and talk about before the pandemic, like just pick up right before the pandemic. Nothing's ever going to stop us. It's going to be crazy. We're never going to get locked in the house
for over a year.
Nothing like that's ever going to happen. We're the best. Yeah, America.
They'll never shut down the entertainment industry and make every waiter break down and live in poverty.
Can you imagine if movie theaters closed?
That'd be crazy. That's insane.
What if they did the Oscars from a train station? That'd be nuts.
You know, I love you. Just always a hustler. You know, you have Credit Stadium. I mean, you don't look like it, so you know, you're a young looking dude. So, but you have credits dating back to '93.
Oh, I got to take some of those off my resume.
Come on,
the old Wikipedia.
What do I, is it 93? Cause I started in like 92, 93. So I don't know if I have anything that's that old.
No, I was looking just a little while ago in 93, you were on a show called Double Double Toil and Trouble. So
that would have been, then you actually just hit when I started. Like that was immediate when I started. I got that gig. I got the gig of the fat man. It was awesome. And it was with it was the Ashley, Kate, and Mary Olson or whatever they were.
Yeah.
And they were still like children. And I was like so green. They changed my voice like in the movie. I had two lines and it wasn't me.
They took your ass out?
Yeah, they took me out, but still use me, but they used a different voice.
Do you think getting the credit that early, even though you got booted out of it? It's like extreme motivation. It's just like, let's go. If I could do it now, I could do a whole bunch of those. I just started.
I think a little bit of each. It's just like, oh my goodness. Okay. So that I just have to be stupid when I go in and out of everything. But when you first start, you're so naive. You think you can do anything, right? That's if I look at how my career progressed, it was because I was so naive. I didn't know I was not supposed to go to New York. I didn't know that. I wasn't supposed to just go on Conan. I didn't know. Like, I just kept doing things. So, and nobody told me, oh, you shouldn't do that. I just did it. So,
yeah, but if you're getting booked on Conan, why? I mean, well, because you can't be seen too late. You can always be seen.
No. The way I got my first Conan credit was, this guy kind of took care of me. His name was Lucian Hold. He was one of the part owners of the comic strip in New York. And he used to put me on every night after. And I met him in Montreal at the comedy festival. But the reason I was there was I followed my friend out. My friend was on the festival. I followed my friend out. I ended up on a show. I just ended up on a show because somebody didn't show up. And they're like, we need a comedian. And they're like, Ian's there. All right, I'll go.
Oh, that's nice.
So, and I was only like 2.5 years in, 3 years in. So, you know, it was, and that just kept going. So I end up in New York. And he says to me one day, he says, there's going to be a Conan O'Brien audition tonight. You're not on it. That's what he said to me. I'm like, okay, well, thanks for letting me know. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to put you on right before it. So if they don't show up, nobody gets missed, right? Mm-hmm. But if they do show up, you get seen.
So
I went on and just did me and didn't have anything to worry about because I don't know if they're there or they're not there. Like, I have no clue, right? So I just do it. And afterwards, after the audition, they wanted to speak to me. They didn't book anybody else. They wanted to speak to me.
Holy shit.
Let's go, dude.
So it was great. And I had to give him one of these. I'm not legal.
Shit, that is beautiful. So you just one day packed it up in Canada after a couple of years of stand-up? Was it after the Montreal thing?
It was a little bit after that. I went home to Vancouver for about 5 months, and then I got a gig on the East Coast that paid me $800. So I took that gig, and I took all that money and turned it into American money and moved, got on a train and went to New York. So
that's nice.
I did it like this. This is how I went to New York. Didn't have a place to stay. So I'm on the train as we're pulling into New York, and I'm like, oh, I may have made a mistake. That's what I'm thinking. And when I got off the train, there was a piece of paper on the ground that said youth hostel, $14 a day. And I lived in a youth hostel for $14 a day for 3 months.
Nice.
Yeah. So
What kind of people are you running into at the youth hostel?
Well, all sorts. Because
was it mid-90s? Mid-90s?
So 95. 95? Okay. Yeah. So 95, 96 is when I moved to New York. And then I moved to L.A. in 2001, around that area. So yeah, I was out there for a while. But people that at the comic strip, and they were like, who is this guy? Because I would show up with, like, entourage of Germans one day, and then an entourage of all Japanese, and then an entourage of English people. It was like, who is that guy?
These are my neighbors.
These are my friends. We all sleep in a room together. It's crazy.
And that's awesome. You bring in a little party every time.
Yeah.
Just to this hostel and just to the comic strip. I just love the I don't know what the word is, but when the shit just unfolds like that, so wonderfully. To get, just to get like one of the top club guys, just like, I love this kid.
Yeah.
You get just
luck.
Random lucky set at Montreal, which is like I would still like to get booked on it, but in the 90s, that shit was even 10 times.
It was hopping. Yeah, it was hopping. And he said to me, he said, you're just nothing I've ever seen before. So why don't you come on down to New York and I'll put you on stage. And I was just like, oh, he's told me to move to New York. So I moved to New York and
Well, that's a good thing. You that's what you want to hear, right? You're like something I've never seen before. Now you're not, just swimming around in an ocean of everybody else. It's like,
yeah, you're not. Yeah, that was the big thing. You never, you were influenced by people, right? You're always influenced by people. And then you get to a certain point and you're like, I can't listen to other comics because I don't want to be influenced. So that's what happened. But it goes back to that being naive thinking, oh, go. What's stopping you? Go. Like end up in our lives where we can't, I can't do that. Well, thank God I was, you know, I guess I was naive enough, and I came from a small little logging village in northern BC. So me moving away from Vancouver where I started wasn't a big thing because I was already moved away from my family. So just keep going. Yeah. We'll see how far this train takes us. We'll just go. So,
man, that's why it takes such balls, you know, or such guts, I should say. It's not genital specific, but just like the guts to just go, you know what? I'm going. I'm going to leave everything here. I'm going to where this industry happens, and I got $800. And when I get off that train, I'm just going to start a whole new career. Yeah. Like I can't even fathom. Do you think that can be done today? Like, pandemic aside, let's say 2019, could a kid from Canada just say, you know what, I got $800. I've been doing comedy for about 2 years. I'm going to go to New York and everything's going to –
You know what? There's a couple things that I say yes, and there's a couple things I say no. First of all, everybody's got social media and everybody's got a website. So I went to New York totally, like I was completely illegal. They said, "What do you do?" I said, "I'm a writer." They're like, "All right. So if you do that, if you went across the border now, they say, "What do you do?" I'm a writer. Well, what do you write? They'd look at your social media and then they say, "Oh, you're a comedian."
Okay.
So that kind of thing stops. But at the same time, it's weird because you don't need to go, you know, because of social media and us doing this and being able to tape sets and people being able to see. The exposure is pretty great in these small towns. Like Sean, you moving to Indianapolis was brilliant. Like you found this community and you built on that. You didn't go to another huge market, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah. Also, it's a lot of timing, just kind of like what you're talking about as well.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't be the same today because we caught a Pat McAfee that was early and hungry and young and with no direction yet. And we just kind of motivated him and like sparked his shit. So that was, but again, it was a perfect timing,
right?
You know, kind of thing.
You met him about the same time I met him, but you like became friends with him. I just thought this guy's funny. I was on Bob and Tom with him, and I had the best more because I would go in there and I would do weeks at a time where I'd just be kind of an extra guest, and they brought him in, and I was always, I don't know if I'm supposed to say that, but I was always bored with who they brought in. And then this ball of energy comes in these stories, and I was just like, dude, you are so funny. And it was just like, he was just, you wanted to be around him. So
he loves you. And you know, it is all about that because, you know, his whole thing was he was lonely, even though he was at the height of his career and his position where he was
in
football. He was lonely because he wanted comedy so badly, but he wasn't like he could just walk into a comedy club during an open mic and be like, "Hey guys, you want to hang out?" You know, like it was different. He needed mature people who had already been shit on a bunch and, you know, and weren't just like eager to like, "Oh, let's hang on to this famous guy."
It's funny that whole thing about you need to be around the people. Like I find I need to be around people that have had disappointment in their life. You know what I mean? Like they've run into things that have had to grind. Cause even though my career has been fantastic and I can't thank anybody and everybody enough, there's still been disappointment. You got to know those people that have disappointment. So,
well, now you have to have that disappointment. It's like what keeps you like leveled off almost like because you'll get shit and you're like, well, I got to calm down. Like, this is nice, but this is not going to change. I'm not going fucking 5,000 square foot house shopping after this credit. Or
I do it every time.
Yeah. I mean, I can't, you know, I can't imagine. I still would love everything. Like I just got an ESP. I'm getting ESPN credits for doing commentary on cornhole.
Right.
You know, and it's so cool, but I would assume. Thank you. See it coming. You know, it's like, it's so wild, but
I had a roommate for a while and he used to say when he got stuff, he said, "I deserve this." And I was like, "No, you earn it. You earn it. You never deserve it. You earn it."
Yeah.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. I like that a lot. That's extremely true too.
Is there anything in your life, like, do you have anything outside of just stand up that you have had a passion for and that you have chased that where because you were funny and because of what you could do in comedy, you're able to incorporate that for, you know, a way to make money?
The only ways that I've made money outside of stand up is I worked in a gold mine. I worked for a dynamite company when I was 19 years old to 21 years old, 18 to 20. I started at the bottom. I would carry explosives. My first job was I carry explosives from the magazine to the truck. And then I started going along. I was called a swamper, and I'd go along with the truck drivers, and then I'd do that in another town instead of just from there. So, and then I ended up driving trucks, and then I ended up in a gold mine setting blasting patterns and stuff like that. So,
wow,
that's awesome.
You know, I don't know that career path, but when you said that your job was to carry the dynamite, I assumed that's where you start. I assumed
it's funny because I hear people talk about some conspiracy things. I'm like, you've never been around dynamite, my friend. That's a smell that won't leave you quickly. And then the other thing that has always helped me is, and it's a weird little thing that's crossed over with stand-up, is hockey. So I grew up in a small town, and as you got older, you basically gave back to the game and you volunteered to coach. So when I moved to New York, things, you know, I get this thing and somebody finds out I'm from Canada. So they find me hockey equipment to play hockey right away. But when I move there full time, I'm like, I'm going to spend some time coaching kids. So
nice.
I started doing that, and I did the same thing when I did in LA. And when I was in New York, I ended up playing on a police fire hockey team, and we were comedians and actors, and Tim Robbins was on our team. And I never told him what I did, but somehow he found out and he gave me a part in one of his movies and got me my SAG card. So
sweet.
Yeah. He's genuine, that guy. So
that's awesome.
Tim Robbins.
Yeah.
That's so cool, man.
It was fun.
How good were you at hockey?
I was pretty good. I grew up with like really good hockey players.
Okay.
I do a podcast with my buddy that I grew up with, who's older than me, but he played in the NHL for Detroit and stuff. And, you know, they call me a donkey is what they call me.
But is that a reference to anything?
You're not a thoroughbred. You're a donkey. Oh. Okay. It's not like I'm hung like one. It's just, you know, I can play, but I'm not a race car. So yeah, it was fun.
Don't you find that that's just, I mean, you have more fun almost doing that than even stand up sometimes? Like that was the example I was looking for. Like, you have this peripheral thing that you love to do, and because you're gifted on a microphone,
and
it took him up with this former NHL guy. And now,
you know, I've gotten to do all these things for the NHL, and I did a clip for where I did a pretend undercover boss thing for the Vegas Golden Knights, where I pretended to be a guy that had never skated before, and he wanted to be on the ice team that cleaned the ice, you know. So then I learned how to the people. I was like, I've never done this before, but I've seen it on YouTube, so it can't be that tough. And by the end of the day, I'm like skating.
So. You did another pilot where it was just your circle of your personality. But I remember the pilot being where you go back to being a normal person, like just a blue collar guy.
Yeah, I did. You're talking about the one I did with my in-laws.
Yep.
Yeah. So we came up with an idea called Ian Bag Get a Real Job, because my family they live on the East Coast in a small town in Virginia, and they just basically think I eat nachos for a living.
You mean your in-laws?
Yeah, my in-laws, not my parents. But like so my wife's family, they just think I eat nachos for a living, and they they own a clam and oyster farms. So they're big brand. The other ones like runs a fishing charter and stuff like that. So we went out there and we did a pilot for A&E, it looked like it was going to go. And then somebody got fired. And the next thing you know, Marky Mark had a show. So
damn it.
God damn
That's
it.
How it works.
How many shows Marky Mark need, man?
I know. Yeah. I know. Yeah. There's a couple people. Oh, my wife is just texting up a storm. Correct, baby. Correct. I apologize. I won't talk about the family. Some people like Katie Sagal, she is in everything. I'm like, you're allowed to say no. You're allowed to say no to one. So
Mark, now he's got a new show. What's it called? It's like a spinoff of something else, but the name wise. I don't know. Someone said he's an asshole in it, though. But it's like, it's just based off his life.
Even like the Wahlburgers comes along.
The Wahlburgers, you know, like,
come on, is it not enough that you're in seven action flicks a year and everyone crushes box office wise? Now you got to go around and start taking over the burger market. Like,
I guess it is, but at the same time, you're like, oh, you kind of, if you get a chance, you don't want to stop. You know,
That's true.
You're like, oh, it's. I'm never going to get anything again. If they say something, you want to do it? Yes. So.
Just do it all. Everybody wants to watch my shit.
I'm more of a Donnie Wahlberg fan myself. But
yes.
That's what it is.
I think I didn't have Donnie. I had Donnie Wahlberg. No, I'm a piece of shit right now for not remembering this. But it was one of the homies from New Kids on the Block. He was he does a play now. I'm a piece of shit, dude.
Oh, that man.
He got us backstage and everything, bro. I felt so cool getting yanked in by him. Like, everybody was all circled around waiting for him to come out backstage after the Broadway show.
Yeah.
And then he brought us in. Oh, man, that's my lady. She walks by.
Sean, come in, Sean. Sean, come in. Come on in. They don't know who my name is.
I had my first weekend back this weekend, basically from Corona, and it was electric, dude. Oh.
When you say Corona, did you get it?
No, I didn't. I got a couple times. I got the scare where someone close contact had gotten it, but I just didn't get it. I got sick as fuck a little while ago, but I got tested a couple times and I was negative. So I just got the old school flu. What's that?
Where were you this weekend?
I was at Comedy Off Broadway in Lexington. I sent you the headshot.
That's where you sent me my photo. Yeah, that's why you can see I got that, the fat man.
You lost weight. You aging like fine wine over here.
That club is
electric, though, but the crowd,
that club
the
is
town.
Fire. That's,
oh. I had my first legit coronavirus scare. There was a party that happened here. My girlfriend threw a party for someone at the comedy club here that she works with. And so they all came out, and it was a big party. There's a lot of people here. And I didn't think anything. I'm going to come in. I see these people all the time, you know, at the club. And I'm like, hey, what's up? And I make my rounds through whatever. And the next day, somebody's like, hey, so-and-so just tested positive for COVID. And she was at the party. And I was like, and then my girlfriend's like, I feel horrible, but I don't think you were around her very much because you just kind of came in and she left a little bit after. And I go, no, you're right. The only thing I did was fucking take a hit off her bowl. Other than that, yeah, pretty distance.
And you don't share pod anymore. No, you don't. You don't share pen. You don't share pod.
Yeah, what a dumb move. And like, and I never do that. Like, I don't even smoke that much, really. Right. But I was just like, okay, party, all right.
It's when you put your guard down. That's when you're just like, oh,
yeah,
yeah.
So,
I mean, I kissed her on the mouth, but other than that, I think I'm pretty safe.
I had her breathe into my face.
How long in when you started before you just said, fuck this, and just started talking to the crowd?
Something I always did. It just grew. It just grew and grew and grew and became a kind of a monster for me. It's just...
That come from the confidence of just being a hockey player that could just fuck somebody up and just like being a big ass, cool ass dude?
No, I think it's more, I did it a little bit. I used to do it on the bus when we used to go to games. I was the kid that everybody that, you know, made fun and everybody had a good time with, you know, and I started everything up and I don't know, tried to make everybody my friend, you know? So yeah, I think it comes from that.
One of the most memorable times I remember was at the Ice House one night. It was packed as shit. Which, no, you know, you're not going to get much better crowds than a slamming packed house at the Ice House.
They say if you bomb there, quit comedy, right?
They do. They do. If you bomb at the Ice House, when it's packed in the main room, you're just doing something wrong, bro.
Just turn around and go home.
But there was a Mexican dude with a cowboy hat on, and it was, you just took this dude for a ride, bro. And it was one of my favorite sets I've ever seen to this day.
Oh, that's nice.
I couldn't remember it because it was just so much, you know, but
you can't remember your friend that was in Backstreet Boys.
Yeah. So,
I mean, come on.
You're hilarious. I love it.
I might have been fucking Mark Wahlberg, dude.
I forgot to put sleeves on your shirt.
I cut these bitches off.
Did you come up?
Yeah. I'm going to start looking for somebody around town that sews them up to give it a nice seam on the edge so it can look like I bought it.
Oh, you'll never find anybody working that kind of stuff
anymore. I know. I wish it was 1912. Maybe somewhere around here. Maybe a guy who does shines.
Somebody with a sewing machine might change your life.
when I was in middle school, that was the thing, you know, like there was the sweatshirt and it was hemmed. You had, mm-hmm. you know, it was trimmed out as the sleeveless or whatever. And that went away. And now, Sean, you're bringing it back.
Bring it back. Like, you've gone Belichick cut off the right here. And then you went further. You're like,
you did. You took it over your shoulder.
Yeah.
The Belichick's too long. I don't like that. I need to, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that went out like the Eddie Murphy. Remember Eddie Murphy used to cut him off right at the elbow.
Really?
He was in like 48 Hours, Beverly Hills Cop. He wore the sweatshirt. Right at the elbow there.
But didn't he cut him off? And like, wasn't his belly button out too? Didn't he cut him off there?
What a ballsy move. What level of confidence you got to have to have the cut? I mean, I don't think you can do it. No, you can't do it now.
I would say yes, but I don't know. Like,
I think you also have to be, you have to have some sort of abs, unless you're on a football field on a practice. Because if you, like a guy like me with a little nice little beer gut, bro, if I cut my shit above my belly button,
sweet tum tum.
I can't imagine the reaction I walk around with a fucking belly.
I can't even wear a shirt that's has color. It has to be black. That's how much I'm worried about my gut, let alone cutting it short. What are you talking about? Like, if it has pigment to it, it shows off my belly.
I feel like we're talking about when you found out Sam Kinison wasn't buff.
Wear that big trench coat. He's got to be buff.
Hey, I feel like you have to be a bear. You have to be like one of those, like a bear to be able to pull that off.
What's that?
The gay dudes that are out of shape.
Big biker gay
dudes. Like,
yeah,
they're the only dudes that could pull off, I think, having any sort of gut and then rocking the belly shirt.
Dude, if I was gay right now, I would be slaying dick every night. I would be like, wouldn't have any problem at all. It's women. They're all picky about that shit. I'm convinced if I went gay right now.
Yeah.
My dance card's full.
Corona would not be the virus you would be worried about.
Nah. No. I'd be worried about really bigger and better viruses.
It gets into your body, but not through your nostrils, I'll tell you that.
How is your family doing? Your lady and your doggies?
The dogs are good. Carrie-Anne's great. She's, she's really funny. I bought her a new car yesterday, so she's been very nice to me. So, yeah.
Beautiful.
She works hard and she's got a great sense of humor. And to be honest with you, as a comedian, we all know this. The last year and a half or a year and whatever it was, really taught you whether you love somebody or not, you know. And I was just like, yeah, she's the right girl. I was like, you know, like, yeah, thank God. Thank you. Yeah.
That's a real thing. Like, you know, like because of the pandemic, if you made it through as a couple, hey, you're solid.
It means a lot. It means a lot. Like, I was like, oh boy, some people, you're like, uh-oh.
Yeah. A lot of people didn't make it.
My fiance and I just woke up one day and just shaked hands. We're like, wrong person. She was like, wrong person. All right, thank you. And then thanks for being engaged. That was fun. And then it was amicable, wasn't it, Sean? Like, it was literally like today. He makes fun of me. He has a bit on stage about white people, how, you know, they can hang out with their ex fiancés. Like,
because I do. He has a new lady.
He's a new lady. She lets me go to lunch with her. I went over to help her change a lawnmower blade. You know,
that's great. After lunch, like, nothing says I'm gonna go fuck my ex like going back to their house to fix the lawnmower after a buddy lunch.
Buddy lunch.
I would have to film the entire interaction I would say I wouldn't be able to even tell my lady before I went. I'd have to film it with like a head cam, like a fucking GoPro on my forehead. To prove
my wife would be fine because she knows if I went for lunch, I'm going to need a nap before we fuck.
Right.
All right. If you're not back by 5, I know there's trouble.
Right. You can't go from lunch from 12 to 2 and then sneak in an hour nap.
Yeah.
You'll have 2 hours to go to work.
But, you know, when the reason you break up isn't because of any the typical shit like infidelity or any of that stuff, it's just simply because you were forced to be too intimate for too long. And then, you know, there's no hard feelings then. You're like, we tried it at an extreme level. And
right.
What happened?
It's weird to me when I think when you break up, you break up. We don't have to be best friends, but that they're the people that have like crazy drama afterwards. I was never one of those people. I was just like, that's just, it's too much. You got life is too complicated to have to deal with this. You just move on. You just like keep going. So,
yeah. And I just don't want a trail of enemies behind me. You know,
Just be nice. How many ex-wives do you have?
I have two ex-wives, two ex-fiancés. I don't want this trail of people. You know,
I'm going to be honest with you. It sounds like you don't get along with people.
Todd will be 50 in June, and
nice.
So you know he's like on an 8 year. You know, every 8 years something really drastic pops off.
But I always make friends because I was, you know, in my peak when the Joey Buttafuoco thing happened. I don't want somebody opening a door. Right. You know, mm-hmm. like, hey, let's just be friends. You know,
yeah.
I don't need that trail, especially now with social media. I don't know, man. Like somebody can ruin your life right now.
You could be ruined at any point.
Canceled City. Yeah. Todd was a detective for 22 years.
Really?
Yeah.
Indiana State Police, undercover. Oh, you know, regular detective, also a regular cop, you know, in the uniform, and then a regular detective, and then they put him undercover, and then he became like, you know, fugitive apprehension team. Then he sat in a fucking truck with radio waves all day, and it kind of fucked him up.
Got him right involved.
Tracing these people down with the phones and shit.
Nice.
I went straight from that job to sports radio.
I think cops are a lot like comedians as far as schedules. You know, it's all around, up and down, and you don't know. So you miss so many, you make plans and you miss them so many times. It's just crazy.
There are a lot of jobs that are conducive for stand up in that way. And plus, like, in cop work, you know, it's when after the thing is done, you congregate and you see who can tell the story the best. You know, it's like, so it's like, I think athletes are like that because you're in the locker room. All right. Mm-hmm. Now who can tell the story about last night better than anybody else?
Right.
And that person ends up getting the floor all the time and you become a performer. You know?
Yeah.
It's like hockey guys. I'm sure every hockey team has the one guy who holds court and tells all the stories.
I was that guy, but I went off to play juniors, and it was punch in the face immediately. I said, I'm done. So. Nope, I'm going to go home and live with my mom. So that's
hockey's is a different animal, dude.
It's a great game. It's got to be seen live. Once you see it live, it's insane.
Then you're hooked. You know, it was like my second hockey game ever. Pat McAfee got tickets. We were in Indy, and he said, fuck it. He got a suite for the Penguins playoff game against Tampa a few years ago, game 7 or some shit. And then he just calls up like 6 or 7 of us of our little crew at the time. He goes, hey, if you guys want to go to the Penguins game in Pittsburgh, come over right now. I got a plane. So we fucking hop on this plane. We can drink some beers. We get there, get picked up in like, you know, the sweet ass vans, go right to the suite, drinking beers, just watch the most electric hockey game, goes in overtime. They win. The city explodes. Then we got back in the van, fucking back to the plane. We were in bed by 1 a.m., dude. Maybe midnight.
That's where I fell in love with hockey. I'm like, this was unlike any live sports experience I've ever had in my life.
I didn't know shit.
I got the towels still. We were spinning the yellow ass Penguins towels, man.
The energy in those buildings is insane.
It is wild. Like, what? It's just a different level of insanity. You know, I know football can get electric too, and you know, but
too big.
But is that what it is? It's just too big. Yeah. It's the size. It's like, is the hockey crowd the perfect size?
Yeah, you can make eye contact with somebody on the other side of the building at hockey, you know, like, and there's still 15, 18, 20,000 people in there, and you can actually make eye contact with somebody.
That makes sense. And I think no matter where you sit in there, when someone fucking smacks that glass, man, you can feel it through your body, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's a little more intimate. Makes sense.
And I do think hockey is a little different to football, where you don't get it until you see them, you know, how talented they are. You're like, on TV, but when you're there, you're like, oh, these are men moving like ballerinas and punching like boxers. So it's insane. Yep. So.
And they're all 6'5" already, but then you put them on another 3 inches of height of skate,
right?
while they come barreling at you at fucking 40 miles an hour,
right?
Jam you up loud as fuck. Also, I think when you score, like it's the I think the anticipation builds so quick, right? And then all of a sudden someone hits one, and then it's fucking electric, man.
A special needs kid starts yelling.
Yeah.
you hang out with Paul Bissonnette a little bit, don't you?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, we've done some projects, had some good times.
Yeah, that guy is, it's on a different level. Like he's fought, used to fight on skates for money and play hockey, like as a talented player, but still had toughness to him. Like,
yeah.
He'd be fun to go out with. You would not feel safe.
Oh, no.
I didn't know Biz did that. So he did the where they were paid to just fight on skates.
No. I'm just saying he was an enforcer.
Okay.
Yeah, he was a policeman on the ice. Yeah, I'm just saying he had the toughness that kept him in the game.
Yeah,
you know, so
prolonged
yeah.
his career.
Just, I love that role. Speaking of running the room, I guarantee you those two guys ran the room for funny when they were like that. They're so funny.
And Biz has that thing, like him and Pat have that same. They're in that same realm of human.
That's funny. They do kind of. They kind of. Like,
no, after hanging out with both of them, you like literally you hang out with them one time, like if they're your friend and you're not just like a fan or something, like you hang out with them one time as a buddy or like, you know, work next to them, like on radio and it's over. The guy, dude, we would do a video and I always like pride myself that when the fucking camera goes on, I can turn it on. We're going, dude. Mm-hmm. Let's get these clips in. Let's fucking get this content. Bro, next to him, I felt like a turtle ass snail ass bitch.
He likes his
We did that, we did the Calgary Stampede.
Oh,
and
shit.
It's my man, the camera comes on and it's like Pat. It's just another level of electricity that, you know, some of us can get in the league, but we're not the MVPs like these kids, dude. It's just another level. And they both have that same it factor. That's why they just fucking, that's why.
You know who else they remind me of? Like those two guys, they remind me a lot of Bert Kreischer too.
Yes.
Yep.
Like, you know, that same kind of level that they got going on.
There are those guys, all three of them. You can just, when you turn on the switch and say, okay, go for an hour. Boom. Mm-hmm. Straight. Without taking a breath. Everything is entertaining and funny for that entire 60 minutes.
Yeah.
You know,
you want to be around. So
I'm more like, all right, can I just sit here and be the sniper? Can I, you know, like I'm Pat Shaw. I will talk every 7 minutes, but it's going to be good. Like I'll just come in and I'm
yeah. out. You're waiting for it. You're waiting for it.
I'm going to write this down. I'm going to add this over here. Then I'm going to two and then minus and say it. And boom. And I'm gone.
Boom. Let's go.
I'll see you guys in 7.
I'll see you in 7.
Yeah.
Back to Canada.
Oh, man. So outside of stand up right now, what's motivating you, like as far as content type projects, you know, like the way you did the pilot, the way you do all these other things? What's got Ian Bagg's blood flowing right now?
What's got me going? I'm doing this hockey podcast that I love, and it's in between Spittin' Chiclets and one called 31 Thoughts. It's just, you know, it's my sensibilities, which it's not too offside, it's not too much, you know, it's stick X's and O's, you know, so it's fun. And then the podcast that I do that you were on, the round table, I think that's really fun, where I just invite three friends over and they answer questions for points, and one of them becomes my BFF by the end of the game.
Yeah,
so, nice.
Yeah, so
that was really fun because he's like the judge of it. He just decides, he's the point man. He just decides if your shit's whack, and if it's whack, you're gonna know, or if it's good, and if you win the round or not.
It's fun.
Actually, when I was with you, Todd, that's you're building the barn. I did Ian's podcast.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
You guys are building a barn? Holy shit.
Well, we had already had the barn. It was like a shed barn, but we made it into a bar.
Yeah.
Oh.
So my backyard has the coolest patio bar in Indianapolis.
Send me a picture.
Yeah, you're going to love this.
Were you doing some show like that where you were fixing barns or something?
Well, we did a pilot.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you did a pilot. I did a pilot too for fixing houses. It's pretty funny. They're pretty tight in that realm, huh? They don't have much sense of humor in that construction realm. I'm just like, hey, I'm a dummy and I'm helping my buddy fix something.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah. That's kind
pretty
of the
much.
Response. They're like, Sean got. Yeah.
I got this many fingers. So, and then I'm thrilled to be, you know, doing stand-up again. Not that I ever stop, but I just you know, I'm sure you did the same thing where you're like, what if I can't do this ever again? Like, what do I become? So, because,
and it almost like it just turns your life. Like, you know, I always like the balance of getting the shows in, getting that electricity, you know, getting that feeling and getting, you know, always getting what I always, you know, what I always desired in doing stand up. Mm-hmm. But then you go back to normal during the week and you're just like, you know, you might do sets at night, but you're just like your normal human again. And right. then electric hits on the weekends, these little 5 hour shows. And it just got lopsided where there wasn't the end. It wasn't there. I mean, I'm still writing out the funny lines and shit. The bits or the, you know, the premise, but not being able to execute them, not being able to get that fucking, just that skydiving feeling where you're just, you know, in your element sucked. That's why this weekend I was just in the zone, bro.
Right.
I asked if I can headline there every weekend.
And they said,
They said, no, probably not. They said, no, I'm still waiting. Actually, I'm still waiting to hear back. So it's not, it's not a no. It's not a yes.
Dude, I can't write shit right now. I have, you know, I try to make myself sit down. For one, you know, during my freak out, will stand up never come back? I started 27 podcasts and, you know, documentaries, everything I could think of peripheral wise to do. But now, like, I'm just so used to just living and then things happened and I just take it to stage. I just did a year of not living. I only worked right here in this room.
You put it on the bullseye. Like, if there's nothing going on, like I always said, comics would be, what are the rules for the road? Like, well, not the rules, but give me some hints. And I was like, don't ever go to a hotel gym. Go to a gym that is not in a hotel because it makes you get out and see the town. Because some guys can get trapped inside the hotel. Sure. And if you're not living, you're not bringing anything new. Right.
Yeah. Yep.
So and you know, I can only take my dogs for their 2 hour walk and learn things. You know? So you're so right. It's just like we're not doing things. So
because I'm just not. You know, I'm not an observation writer. I'm not. I can't just take a topic and just write jokes. Yeah. So, you know, it's a story of something stupid that happened to me.
But it's nothing worse than watching a comedian and you can see that he was sitting at a table at a desk writing that. Like,
yes.
You can feel it. You're just like, very nice, but we know that you never did that.
Yeah. We know that you're writing a fictional novel here.
Yeah.
Friend. Right.
Exactly. But I realized I was turning and burning way too much. Like, I was doing way too much and I have to say no to some stuff and make sure that I'm in town, you know. So
yeah, that's interesting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's down. You still in Seal Beach?
Yep, I'm down here on the beach in Long Beach.
Nice.
You ever hang out with Gene Pompa? He's down there all the time.
I'm in Belmont Shore. He's in Seal Beach. We got a little jetty in between us, and that's what we like. It. We don't need too many comedians on one side. You would have liked it the other day. So one of the boats out front, like one of the big freighters, a bunch of immigrants. I was told they're from North Korea. Just bailed over and stole like a boat and just like hoofed it to the beach. So there was this fairly big boat just comes flying into the beach and just crashes and people just jump off and start running it. And all of a sudden I see like cop cars coming from everywhere. I'm like, this is crazy.
That's awesome.
It was just like, oh my God, what are they filming? It's real.
How do you crash the goddamn boat into the beach? That's what I expect, dude.
I love it. I'm just like, how did you not see California? That's what I said. California just stuck on them.
There's so much room to not crash into. But, you know, if you can steal the boat and get everybody out there, oh, man.
Yeah, it's
poor
good.
Guys. I wonder, you see them catch anybody or they all get out?
I'd say a couple got away. And then I would say they had like about 16 lined up. So.
Right.
Oh, damn. I wonder if who got away, if they're still out there working.
Who knows? But the Federales were sitting in front of my house for about a week, just like staring at a binocular, trying to figure out which boat I came from.
Are you one of these guys, Ian, that always keeps yourself in TV shape, or when you know you got something coming up,
remember the boxer Ricky Hatton? They used to call him Ricky Fatten because if he wasn't on that kid, I'm like,
everything.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I like sitting around and eating and drinking with my friends and having a great time. Like it's a really fun thing to do. So
I do too. Well, if it comes up to pilot season ever again, we got some advice for you. We got these friends over here that run this company.
Oh.
And let me tell you something. Everything you've learned about getting healthy, you know that there's so much contradictory information out there, and that you're dealing with these still old-fashioned frame of mind people, or like the old food pyramid thing that was fake as fuck, you know?
Yeah. What you got to do is you got to do this and then these things here, then on top of that, shut up, bro.
Make sure you get some greens.
You don't know what you're talking about. I mean, everybody knows how to chew their food. Everybody knows how to use chopsticks. Well, half of you know how to use chopsticks.
Mm-hmm.
You know how to fold a slice of pizza so the cheese doesn't slide off so you get that perfect first bite every time. But do you really know how to eat? That's the question you got to ask yourself. Because Noom says, if you want to lose weight, it's about one thing that you ate today. It's not about that. It's about eating in general.
It is. It's about this. You know, this is why Noom uses a different approach, Todd. It's called psychology, friends. All right. And here's the thing. You ever gotten questionable health tips? We all have. We know what's up
all the time.
Well, we don't need that no more. Okay. Because Noom knows that changing health is not about rules. It's about changing your mindset. Enter psychology.
Yeah. Understand your cravings and then learn how to substitute. You know what I'm saying? I don't have to smash a giant mixing bowl of Cinnamon Toast Crunch every time I want something sweet in here. I can get educated about how to treat my body better when that craving hits. I'm going to use my brain to help my body. That's what they're teaching you. So eat better, feel better, understand your cravings, know how to shop for yourself, and know what food is bad.
And the thing is this, if you want to get healthy and stay healthy, you need to know more about how to make decisions. Stop being an irresponsible fuck, okay? Noom gives you the knowledge, the tools, the confidence to make strategic choices to turn into long-term habits. This is about habits, okay? And those long-term habits turn into a healthier, happier you.
Everyone's busy. We get it. That's why Noom doesn't demand too much of your time. They only ask for 10 minutes a day. 10 minutes a day. That's it. It's easy.
10 minutes a day.
That's a sexual intercourse session for me. I mean, that's me and my lady smashing. It's 10 minutes. That's all it takes.
With foreplay.
Over 80% and having a shower first. Over 80% of Noomers finished the program, and over 60% have stuck with their goals for at least 1 year. It's proven. So listen, there's a science to getting healthier, and it's called Noom. Sign up for your trial today at Noom. That's Noom.com/guns blazing. Learn how to eat again with Noom. Sign up for your trial today at Noom, Noom.com/guns blazing.
I mean, that's what you want right there. And that's what you're going to get, guys. Right, that's guys, what you want.
I didn't know who you were talking to.
Write it down, Ian.
I wrote it down.
People think it's about every meal. It's not. It's a mindset. You know, you get it.
I got to get my mindset. I apologize.
You know.
Man, well, we're pumped you got to come on our show today. We're thankful for your time.
No, thank you for asking.
You dropping, some of your history, some of your everything you got going on.
Yeah.
Tell them about your website. Tell them your
website isn't quite done. No.
Me but too. Mine went down.
It's ianbag.com is my website. I have the new, I guess they used to be called albums. Now they're called digital releases. Mm-hmm. It is out on Spotify. It's called Everybody Wants Some. It's a show from Hermosa Beach just before the pandemic happened. It's my birthday, and it's about me trying to get people to have a cupcake is basically the whole show. You can listen to that. I love it. Follow me on the Spotify. If you enjoy my comedy, I'd love to hear from you. I'll tell you what my social media is I like right now. So I just started doing TikTok, and I love TikTok. I follow nothing but special needs kids.
I'm going to follow you right now,
because they're so great. They're so talented. But I follow these deaf magicians because they don't know they make noises, and you can figure out tricks, right? They have their little tick they make where they make a noise, but that's where the trick is. You're like, oh, I figured it out. Thanks a lot. So,
I'm gonna go to the list of people you follow. I'm gonna get in there.
You will see. You'll be like surprised. But I love Sir Bag on Twitter and Ian Bag on Instagram. So.
Yeah. Well, sir, we can't thank you enough.
I never got to meet you before, and I've always heard such great things. So, yeah, this has been a real honor. As soon as Sean said you were coming on, I was like, oh, this is great.
Okay, I'll put up with him.
I was not disappointed.
I gotta be honest with you, Sean. We were talked about grinding before, and you did really well, man. Congratulations. I know you're still having fun. You're not done or anything. I'm like, wrap it up, Sean. Go to sleep. your work ethic is something that a lot of guys need to learn. You know, it's show business, and your effort and your work ethic is impressive. So, congratulations.
Well, I appreciate those flattering and humbling words.
And also, fuck you.
Damn, man, I missed you, and I'm so thankful you came on.
Yeah, keep in touch, man. Yes, I know you're all getting verklempt, but you know, keep in touch, you son of a.
I sure will. We'll be in Vegas weekend, at the ACL, playing some cornhole, doing some content. If you happen to be in Vegas, come on over.
Are you going
to
be in Vegas? With us.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm in Vegas.
This weekend.
Yeah, I do an outdoor show once a month at the Desert Pines Golf Club, hole number one. I will be there Friday night. Maybe come do a show. Come get on the show after your cornholing.
Okay, what time's your show at? I'll get all your information.
I think it's 8 or 9. I can't remember. I think it's 8. Okay. So, yeah, I'd love to see you out there. So
yeah, yeah. If you're there, are you there on Thursday night?
I might be. I don't know if I'm going in yet. So.
Okay. Well, if you do come Thursday night, come do our show. We'll be at LA Comedy Club for the midnight show.
Oh, you're going to be.
Butch Bradley's going to come on. Rocky Dale Davis, my buddy Chris Thorin. And I got Edwin's probably going to, he said he might stop by. So we're just going to have a fun time with a bunch of killers. So why not add
you say show, you're just going to do stand up or?
Just stand up.
Stand up show. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. What we do is the Thursday before every weekend, every national event for cornhole that we work.
Mm-hmm.
We do a set on the Thursday night in that town. We'll do a show.
Sure. What did I just say? Like just a worker bee. Just a good big worker bee.
Gotta get that money, homie.
You know? You need 5,000 square feet house.
Yeah, I'm trying, bro. Hey, love you, brother. Thank you so much, man.
Be well, guys.